Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans with two of my little buddies. Got Mike and Scott on the air, okay? Remember to tune in. See you around.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey!
The Verbal Shenanigans Podcast.
I can't hold my breath that long anymore. That's disappointing. I noticed that the other day. I was swimming in a pool, like there was a graduation party at my cousin's like pool club or whatever. I can't hold my breath that long anymore. It's kind of depressing. I don't know what that is, but maybe I'm dying.
Like, what would you usually go, like, underwater? Like, how long? Are you, like, an Olympic swimmer and can go to the other side underwater?
Well, that's exactly what I was doing, but I was only doing the width of the pool. I was trying to go there and back, and I was only getting a little bit more than just there. Like, I would get there and then maybe a quarter and come up, like, you know, like, kinda like not good, not good. So
maybe it was all them years you did chew that did it.
Maybe. It's a possibility. I don't think
it was worth it. I mean,
I don't think it affects my lung capacity. Chew. Oh, yeah. It's great. But anyway, guys, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. That was a hot intro right there. We got right into a hot topic of holding your breath. welcome
to very controversial.
Welcome to the show, Verbal Shenanigans, episode 251. We just came off our huge, massive podcast at 250. look out! So we are on our ascent to 500. Okay, we are halfway there.
I mean, I know we're up to big things because area code 251 is apparently southwestern Alabama. So when hot things happen, you think of 251.
In the 251. But anyway, I am Scott, and that is Mike.
For the moping.
That is Mike down there in the sweet south in Georgia. And we are a weekly show that I hope you guys enjoy and tune into. And last week was a fun one. We had Garrett McNamara, who surfs on tsunami waves. So, Verla, what did you do?
I basically sat around, and then the week was up, and we came back to record. That's pretty much it.
Gotcha. Yesterday, I was at this Oktoberfest, which I know sounds weird right off the bat, considering it's June. But there was this German park, which we've been to one time before. It's a couple towns over, it's called Germania Park.
Oh,
but it's like a German club, I guess. They, you know, like a almost like a heritage club kind of, and it's set up. And they had like an Oktoberfest, you know, like $5 beers and bratwurst and stuff like that. And we went with a couple friends, and what turned into what started as a nice fun afternoon started to get pretty crazy. So beers were $5. Everybody, so we're all drinking beer. Now we noticed some tables around us had they were stacking their plastic cups and making towers.
Okay.
And there was a couple impressive towers right off the bat. It was like, wow, that guy's tower's big. Their towers are huge. Like, how are we ever going to get that? So the time
life
goes
goals.
The time goes by, and you know, we're starting to suddenly notice, hey, we our tower's growing pretty big here. Any events dying down? So, like, some couples who had their big towers had left already. And this is where I have issues. The competitive spirit, really. I'm not a good loser. sports, things like that, beer pong, whatever it is, I really, really try to win.
Yes, and I have noticed that with you.
Yes. My wife is the same way. So now, she had a couple beverages in her, which she does not drink too often. So she was fired up, And the other people we were with happened to start to get fired up. And we start building this tower. Okay. And we're stacking and stacking. And people are starting to join in with us. Like, wow, look at that tower. And an old lady comes up to us. And she's like, I'll help. And she starts bringing... She starts bringing cups to us, right? And she's going around the people grabbing empty plastic cups. And then I start hawking cups. I start going around people like almost creepy, like, hey, you done with that? You done with that cup? We need it.
Were you just in line talking to everybody? Hey, hey, listen, I know you're getting a beer, but when you're done, it'd be really cool. I mean, I know I'm a mid-30s man, but look at the plastic tower I made over there. Now, don't look at that one where the people left. We knocked that over. That was BS that was over there. Now, we got the cool one right here. That's the spirit of Oktoberfest.
So you got to remember, in order to increase your tower, you need to increase your drinks. You know? So I'm walking around, like, having a beer, and then walking around grabbing people's cups. Like, people are handing us stacks. Now, Berlo, if you check your phone in just a second, I sent you an image of this tower, which I will put on Instagram when this episode goes up. this tower has...
you got some levels here. Let me... One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Just in the picture alone, there's 10 layers. And that's not the full picture. And it's not only 10 layers. We're talking depth here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
I'm not talking about like a single stack of 10 that you see in that cup competition where they bring it down to one cup and stack it back up.
Nope, not cup stacking. Nope.
Yeah, I'm seeing about a 3x5 radius of beer cups there.
It's impressive, right? It's kind of beautiful.
It's pretty good and all. So explain, did the cops enjoy your story when they pulled you over?
No, we didn't drive home, which was good. But I got to be honest, I wasn't, like, destroyed. The girls, Alex and our friend, they were a little buzzed up. But we Ubered anyway. So we start stacking them up. And now a lot of people are getting involved, like almost uninvited architects of my building here. I was starting to get a little mad, like, please move. Like, this is not your tower. Like, stop taking ownership of your tower. This is our tower.
So the competitive spirit, you were kind of like, hey, I'm the 85 Bears of plastic cup stacking. I don't need any free agents coming to this team.
Well, you know, you're creating this thing that is now very sensitive. Like, one move and that whole thing comes toppling down. And we did have a couple falls, but not full breaches where the whole thing fell down. So we're all getting into it. And there's 7 of us, and then there's probably another 6 or 7 people that helped start joining us and getting cups. And people are starting to run over and give us cups, and the excitement is building. We get to, like, the 11th or 12th level, and Alex, like, knocks a big chunk of it down by mistake. And, of course, I'm like, what are you doing? Well, you know. Now, at the time, I was standing on one of the picnic tables, which they're all like picnic tables, like Oktoberfest style. And right as that happens, like, as I'm like, no, what are you doing? Why'd you knock that down, babe? The table breaks, and I go down like in wrestling when they blow up the announcer's table, like, every single day. That's essentially what it felt like. Like, I landed right on top of the table. Now, Berlo, I'm going to be sending you another picture here of the table.
So when you crashed down through the table, were the people who organized the event equally as happy with you as you were feeling?
Well, this was the moment where we exited the place, where we said, okay, and we knocked our tower down, and we all just made a quick beeline outside of the event to the parking lot.
So was this like Blues Brothers, where a bunch of Germans were coming chasing after you, trying to capture you?
No, it didn't get there. But we knew that maybe that was our time to go. It was a clear... sign that things are time to go. And
there's not many scenarios where breaking a table says, no, we're going to stick for a couple more minutes.
Yeah, maybe we should get another round. But it's just so funny, man.
Oh, good. Thank God you're here. After you fix the picnic table I broke, we got to start building this plastic cup right back up, baby.
Maybe we should use some cups to prop the table back up.
Yeah.
But it was it just, like I said, the competitive spirit in me just always seems to come out. And then if you throw in like two or three beers on a sunny day, the competitive spirit, it goes full force and starts to really
So what you're telling me is the failure of the Shenanigan Showdown was I didn't get you drunk enough to hop on a train and go across state.
Yeah, the Shenanigans Showdown, we know the problem. We made it too long. We made it a year where I know personally, I almost forgot about it for a couple of months. So we one day we will reformat that and do something similar. But yeah, the competitive fire in me just sometimes gets a little too intense, and I'm starting to recognize it now as I get older, and I might have a problem.
You think?
Yeah.
Like, what part of the story, if you live in a, you'd be like, you know what? I live a good life. I don't need to change a thing.
Falling through the table was kind of a little bit of an exclamation
point. The wake up call?
Yeah, like maybe I should stop doing this kind of thing.
Maybe we should work with AA, where we tell them, all right, this 12-step stuff isn't working as good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if it's a one table step, then people would be like, oh, man, I got to rethink my life.
Once you go through a table, life has to go in a different direction. You need to do a 180. But I don't know.
How do you say 3D in German?
3D. But I don't know, man. We were singing German. So overall, it was a fantastic time. But it was pretty hilarious how things kind of unfolded or broke, if you will. Real quick, bro, before we get to our guest, we have a interesting guest. I wanted to ask you something here.
All right.
Okay, now, you know, it's been pretty publicized that Justin Bieber and Tom Cruise, they're, you know, people are saying they should get into an MMA fight.
Mm-hmm. I believe we talked about in a previous podcast about
the celebrity beef, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was curious. So Bieber and Tom Cruise, right, they're 31 years apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, like, people took to the Twitter and stuff like that and were challenging, like, you know, calling out celebrities that were 32 years older than them, right? 31 years older than them. So, Berlo, I was curious. I took your age.
All right.
And I added 31 years to it. And looked up some celebrities that I want to know if you think you can you could hold your own in a fight against, in a cage fight.
Okay.
And see,
73-year-olds, okay. I took two kickboxing courses, so they might be in trouble, but continue.
Okay. So, Berlo, I looked up a whole bunch of different guys and girls. There's some really – you really pulled up – your age plus 31 pulls up some really interesting people. So I think you're going to – I think you're going to enjoy some of the people on this list here.
Okay.
All right, Berlo. So you got to be realistic. We're talking about at their current age. We're not talking about any of these people in their prime, just to clear that up.
Obviously. And they challenge me now. It's not my fault what their age is.
And we're talking cage fighting, MMA, UFC rules. Okay, so.
All right. All right.
You can't use weapons. You can only use what God gave you. And
gave me a bunch.
You're in your spandex and you're ready to fight. Okay.
All right.
So the bell rings. Boom, boom. Michael Berlo's in the red corner. And in the corner across from him, in the blue corner, is Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty.
Okay. Is that the one with the really long beard?
Yeah. He's like the guy. The guy that says like controversial stuff that isn't really controversial from a 73-year-old from the South. Mm. But. Duck Dynasty, Phil Robertson, staring you across the way.
That might be a tough one.
I agree.
He spends all his life outside and doing stuff on his own. So I feel it's one of those, even though he wears like camouflage baggy stuff, like if he took his shirt off, it might be decently ripped under that.
I agree. He's got that old, maybe like hunting streak. He's a killer already. He hunts all the time.
And he feels like one of those guys who's like, I got the power of God in me, and he's just going to go wacko strong for some reason.
Right.
So I'm going to take an L on that one, Scotty.
First one, he takes a loss. All right. Yeah. I have to agree. I think Phil might present a not an easy first round match there, Berlo.
Now, that's a hard way to start my MMA career, Scott. I got to be honest. I should talk to my gym about, stepping it down a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about 73, bro, but there are some fantastic names on their list. So let's move right to the next one. Steve Martin, wild and crazy guy. Steve Martin across the cage from you. He's got, he just finished playing his banjo. He's fired up. He's ready to fight. Can you take down Steve Martin?
I lose you. And now you're back.
Oh.
You were breaking up there for a bit.
Oh. Can you take Steve Martin?
Absolutely. for what I hear, he's like a sometimes difficult to work with. He seems like that, since I'm a big name, I think I have a bunch of power kind of people.
Okay.
And I just feel I can take the father of the bride.
One of the best stand-up comedy books probably ever written, by the way, if anybody's ever interested in.
Oh, he's got
Born Standing Up.
Tons of respect for the comedy, but he just doesn't show me something where I'm like, I should be concerned here.
Okay, so you're going to take down poor old Steve Martin.
All right, I'm one for one. All right, we're good.
All right, how about Ed O'Neill? Al Bundy himself.
Oh, Al Bundy.
I told you, you've got a killer crew coming up.
Yeah.
Can you beat the man's man himself?
He would take me. I was about to say he played in the NFL. He still looks a little. He's got some girth to him.
Right.
I mean, I can't really tell if it's muscle or mass, but I got a feeling like he's that one of those, I got it once, I'll never lose it. And he would just be like, oh, you want to try that kind of guy. It's like, maybe I could see myself starting out okay, but in the end, I could see him taking me out.
I agree. He might have that old man strength that, like, you, when you see those videos of like kids tormenting old men and then the old man just pops him one. And, I got to agree. If I'm a betting man, I'm taking Ed O'Neill. Sorry, pal. Mm. All right, bro, let's switch it up here. It's 2019, equal rights. We have transgender athletes fighting, in different divisions. So the ladies are not offhand. Do you think you could take Cher?
Oh, absolutely. She's all plastic. I don't think she had a rough day in her life. I literally think it'd be one slap and over.
You don't think she had a rough day in her life? She lost her husband in a ski accident.
They weren't husband and wife at the time. They were well divorced after that.
Oh, I don't know. I thought they were still together.
Yeah.
So she was happy about the trip.
No, she was. There are plenty of women out there who are athletic and can kick my ass, but there is zero possibility that Cher is one of them.
All right, fine.
I'm calling it out. I'm talking smack. It's going down. You can turn back time, but you can't turn away my fist.
All right, fine. We're staying in a similar realm, plastic and all. How about Dolly Parton?
I can't fathom how I lose that one. I mean, as long as I don't
suffocate,
punch away those large saggy things on her front, I mean, I guess I'll be fine.
All right, so you can take out Cher. And what about a Cher and Dolly Parton tag team?
That'd be interesting. Let me think about
that. All right. What if we throw in Goldie Hawn?
Goldie Hawn. I mean, she's skinny. She's very skinny, last I recall. I mean, and that was when she was younger. So, I mean, of the three of them, I think Dolly Parton's got that country you know, backyard toughness, maybe, that she could give me a swipe or two, but of the even with the three of them together, I think I could probably handle myself.
So let me paint the picture for right now. So you're sitting there in the red corner getting pumped, and out comes in the blue corner Dolly Parton, Cher, and Goldie Hawn ready to attack, and you're saying you could end all three of them.
You'd be a hated man. Well, I wouldn't blame people for hating me. I'd be even asking myself, why am I doing this again? I better have some good money for this. I mean, Dana White better be handing over some sweet cash if I take on this fight. But
all right. Well, now I'm going to do a little rapid fire here, because I'm going to save the last two. The last two are really good. Okay. So I'm going to do your rapid fire. You're just going to say yes or no. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. John Lithgow.
I say yes. It'd be kind of even, but I say yes.
Reggie Jackson.
Former athlete. He probably still works out a ton. I'm going to say no.
Neil Young.
Absolutely. Singers, life on the road, stuff like that. It had to take a toll out of them. Absolutely.
Diane Keaton.
I can't fathom how I don't win this one.
Liza Minnelli.
Sure, next.
Bette Midler.
I love beaches, but no, you're going down.
Henry Winkler.
I would lose just because I love the Fonz.
You would take a dive?
You know what? I would walk in and be like, I forfeit. This man is too wonderful. And they say he is literally the nicest guy in Hollywood. So I'd be like, Mr. Winkler, punch me in the face. I'm going to sit down here for the 10.
So you would take a dive in like the first round?
Absolutely. And that's a story and a half telling people I got punched by Henry Winkler.
Okay.
I was the one guy to piss him off.
All right. So, Berlo, before we get to our guests, here's the last two. All right. Here's the last. Mm-hmm. So 73 years young. In the opposing corner, the one, Vince McMahon, is staring you across the cage.
Zero capability of winning that fight. Now he's jacked. He's insane. So even if somehow I get an upper hand, there's going to be something in the back of his head that's going to trigger, and he is just going to go buck wild on me.
The image of him like choking you out, being like, you're fired, like choking you out, is a great image in my head. Yeah, he's.
I'm just scared he doesn't do the whole Trish Stratus thing where he makes me bark like a dog.
That guy has had probably every steroid known to man, which is fantastic.
Oh yeah, he fully admitted that. I mean, that was back when steroids wasn't that illegal, and then a little bit further when it was completely illegal.
All right, Berlo, final opponent, 73 years young, the president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Even though I will not do it, government, so please don't investigate me. Not a prayer in the world for that guy. Once again, an example of a talker who might think he's tough. He's probably sitting back going, I was in a military camp 50 years ago and had his daddy get him out of everything. He will go into it in his head saying, oh, I got this. And I would just wail like you would never see wailing before. And all politics aside, if you love the guy, God bless you. But in a fight, Michael Berlew handles 45.
I'd go right for that stupid toupee or whatever, his hair. Just grab by that and start pounding.
Oh, yeah. Definitely you go for the face, because it will just be the absolute shock and the realization of, oh, my God, I'm in a real fight. And he'll basically panic.
Not to mention, you are the leader of the punching club.
Punching team, yes.
All right, Berlo.
T-shirts to come, everybody.
So, like I said, you had quite an interesting age. A lot of people that were pretty damn cool and well known at 73 years old. So just to recap, Phil Robertson take you down, Ed O'Neill would take you down, and Reggie Jackson. Solid picks. And Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, yeah. So, Berlew, we'll be setting up you, Dolly Parton, Cher, and Goldie Hawn for our next podcast episode.
So yep. I look forward to the 252, everybody.
Guys, strap in.
I'm going to be working them 9 to 5, bitches.
All right. Berlew, I think it's guest time. Who we got?
We're going to be talking to actor Terrence McGovern. He's a seasoned actor. He's been in a lot of different TV shows and movies. You may recognize his voice as one of the lead stormtroopers in the Star Wars films, the one who says these are not the drones we are looking for. But you probably best know him as the original voice of Launchpad McQuack in DuckTales and Darkwing Duck.
I'm excited. Let's give Terry a call. Terry, you should be able to hear Mike. Mike, you should be able to hear Terry.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Doing well, Terry. Yourself?
Good. How much time is allotted for this?
I mean, we generally go around 30 minutes or so.
Oh, my God. You really think so?
We could try a first two-hour one if you want.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. And there's no breaks, right? Yeah, just blathering for 30 minutes.
Yeah, we can go however long you want. 20 minutes is fine. It doesn't matter. We'll just...
Yeah, well, if I suddenly say I have to go say mass, you'll know I've probably reached the end of it. Or I have to go perform some alchemy.
Alchemy, that's anyway, a first.
Oh.
Yeah, let's get started.
So, Terry, I mean, you've been in the business for so long. I know, where did you get the acting bug from exactly? Was it directly, I know your dad did some acting. Did he carry you along the way, or did you find your own way into acting?
Well, the whole catalyst for me was radio. My dad was in radio when I was a kid, and that just fascinated the hell out of me. So you sit down at this thing, and you talk into that thing, and people hear you all over town. Which, you know, it was local radio in those days. And I just really loved it. And so I did something that I discovered. And this is not bragging. This is called good luck. But I'm a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell, and his book Outliers talks about the 10,000 hours. You familiar with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great book.
If you do something for 10,000 hours, you should be there. You should be there. After all that work. And to do that and to be successful at a young age, obviously, mathematically, you have to start it very early. So I had the bug when I was about 15 years old, and I started out sending little reel-to-reel tapes, those little guys that could fit in a tiny box, and you put a stamp on it, and off it went. And one of them I sent to the program director of the local NBC station in Pittsburgh, WJAS. And mind you, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me doing this. I didn't feel like I was imposing on somebody, or if I was, it apparently didn't bother me. The point was, I wanted what I wanted. And that's typical of 15-year-olds, isn't it?
Yes.
So that kind of hormonal acceleration spurned me on to send these tapes out all over the place. Anyway, guy's name was Gil. Can't remember his last name. He went on to work for Billboard magazine. Gil Fagan. And he sent me back a really sweet, encouraging letter. Years later, I found the tape, a copy of it, and it was the most amateurish, childish, silly thing you've ever heard. It was just, and my Pittsburgh accent was as thick enough to cut with a knife. But he saw something, or was just telling me that he saw something in me, so maybe I'd quit bugging him. And he sent me this encouraging letter, and that was, I kept that with me. That was the thing that spurred me on, and I finally got a job outside of town, outside of Pittsburgh, that happened to be an excellent radio station staffed by really terrific pros. It was sort of like AAA ball, you know? And I worked there, met the man that would become my best man at my wedding, Phil Brooks. And then KDKA came calling. That was the big one in Pittsburgh.
Now,
and yeah.
No, I was going to say, in those days of radio, when you're first getting in, what is the format like? Are you just playing? Are you playing top 10 hits? You're just doing commercials? Where are you starting at?
Well, to start a KDKA in 1965 meant that you were going to be working. If you got the job there, you were going to be working on top 40 radio.
Gotcha.
However, we were not anywhere near the Bill Drake format or the most top. There was another K station in Pittsburgh called KQV. And they were just, pounding it. One song into another, talk over the lead-ins and all that. They were sort of Bill Drake. But we were just, we were kind of suave. We just reflected our own personality and talked the way we talk. And that was the greatest thing about my career. I never had to do the puke voice. Pardon me, but that's what we call it.
Right.
Hey, everybody, how are you doing?
All right.
The puker. Yeah, the puker. So I never had to do that. I don't know if I could have done it to sustain. And so KDKA, and then I went to the service, and I started contacting my best man's brother. Phil Brooks' brother was Al Newman, who was the program director at KSFO in San Francisco during their absolute heyday, because they had Don Sherwood. And if you look in the, say, mid-late 50s, if you look at all the major markets in the United States at that time, every one of those markets had a guy who was the guy. Let's see. If you went to Los Angeles, it was Bob Crane. If it was Chicago, it was, I don't know, maybe Dick Larkin. New York was Klavan and Finch. Originally, Rayburn and Finch. Gene Rayburn was Finch's first part. These stations were all guided by the morning show, and that's when the shift took place to really start saving money by not producing dramas or comedies anymore, but playing records. And you spent your money on the DJ. And the DJ was expected to be a guy that people liked and people wanted to listen to.
We'd be screwed, Mike.
Yeah.
I said me and Mike would be screwed if that was the case. That's why. That's
well,
what we
I don't
podcast.
Know because... I don't know. I did listen to a bit of your podcast, and I think you guys are very charming and you're very likable. The problem is, may I say this on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Give it to us.
Okay. You're not outwardly directed enough. By that, I mean, don't flip that switch unless you're going to talk about the people listening. Don't talk about your own... whatever it is that you've got going in your life, because if they aren't the most important thing, they sense that.
Mm.
So if you say, hey, how you doing? How about this damn Trump? Well, you wouldn't go there because that's being done everywhere. But how about this new device that's just come out? And you turn to your partner and say, Mike, tell us about it. And now you've got them listening.
Gotcha.
Once you engage, then you can digress. You can, after you finish the thought or a block of programming, you can screw around. You can do the frosting on the cake. But they're going to like you for giving them something. That's it.
Gotcha.
That's all I wanted to say. Okay. So back to me, I guess. one other question.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead. Okay, so you were in radio for like the 60s and 70s.
And then I came back in the 90s. He returns.
Like bell bottoms. They came back in the 90s for a little bit, too.
Who did?
Bell bottoms.
Bell bottoms. Everything wants to come.
Well, I still have mine.
Oh, well, good.
Oh, nice.
I hope you're wearing them now.
No, I'm not, but I think somewhere in the deep, dark recesses of stuff I don't need, I have a Nehru jacket. And that's a whole other... and I've got a huge Betamax collection.
Wow.
Oh. So I'm not a guy you want to try to mess with. You know? I'm always going to be... I'm going to be light years ahead of you.
So let's talk. So you're doing radio in the 60s and 70s. What led to 71, where you're in THX 1138? And is that the first time you met George Lucas, or did you guys know each other prior to this filming?
Let me think. George, I used to have a... I was doing evenings at KSFOs, or afternoons. It was 4 to 7, 3 to 7, something like that. And we had mercifully short hours in those days. And I always thought of myself as... I didn't consciously say, you're a Canadian, but I was. And I knew that I was... that I had this sort of bent way of looking at things, and that I could make people laugh. I still get feedback. Geez, I remember you telling that story. Yeah, we were laughing and we crashed the car and my family was killed. But that was a joke. That didn't never really happen. But people would remark that they thought something was funny. So I decided to do, I was a big fan of Fire Sign Theater, and I wanted to do a detective thing. So I created a character that was, unfortunately, way too close to the Fire Sign Theater character in his name. They had Nick Danger, and I didn't even think about it. I just called my guy Nick Dandy, and he was a private DJ. And he had an Effie-like secretary, a la Maltese Falcon. And I was just stupid. And the girl, the assistant, was the smart one who solved the cases. And then that was 6:45 to 7 most nights. And then at 7 o'clock, from 7 to 7:30, this is clearly an indication that I wasn't that excited about being me, but I like to act and be other people. I did an alternate character who would come in and visit me. And I got really good at doing the thing. You familiar with Phil Henry?
No.
Phil Henry?
No.
An amazing cat. I don't know if he's still on the air, but he was in L.A. for years. And he would talk to himself on the radio. It was the most live. So he could flip the switch to put him on filter, sound like a phone, and then back to his voice. And he would have raging battles with people.
See, Mike, you have a future career. You talk to yourself in the mirror. You know, you could, bring that onto the airwaves.
Well, I think it's important to talk to yourself in the mirror. As Mel Brooks would say, if you talk to yourself in the mirror, you're not there. Look out, you're Dracula. So I did these two characters, and the character's name was Richie Vatula, who was the name of a kid I grew up with. And my brother at the time had a 57 Chevy, so I posed as Richie standing alongside the Chevy, and I had my hair all greasy and you know, kind of in a twirl on top, real thick glasses. So I looked like kind of a nerdy Buddy Holly. And he talked up in here like this. Hey, Mr. McGovern, hi. Oh, Richie Vatula, my mechanic. And he would bring a box of 45s. And we would play the 45s. And they were hits of the 50s and early 60s. And so that was my way of doing a half hour of oldies. I wasn't playing, Richie Vatula was. Unbeknownst to me... I had already worked with George on THX 1138 doing, off-screen voices of the robots. And then so he knew with me, and he listened apparently to the show and loved the Richie Petula segment because he was working on a movie that was very much like that. So he calls me into the office, and actually his somebody's at home. I hear a wife.
Yep, that's Scotty's
yeah,
wife.
Yeah. That was my wife just popped in and was like, hello.
What's her name?
Her name is Alexandra.
Alexandra! Greetings to you. Greetings to you. We'll return your husband momentarily.
So, she doesn't want that. She doesn't want that, so just keep me on the line. She'll be happy.
Then you're really married. So, Fred Reese, who had Francis Coppola's producer, and George was in that group at Zoetrope. He was being protégé by Francis. Fred Roos said, do you want to come in and read for a movie George is doing? And I said, sure, because I saw myself as an actor who just happened to be trapped in the body of a disc jockey. I mean, that was what I was going to ultimately do. That was just a given. So I auditioned for all sorts of things. I did commercials. I did stage plays. And I went in to audition for what turned out to be American Graffiti. This is a true story. And again, it goes back to the heart of Gladwell's The Outliers, is that when you're young, you have an impetuosity or you have a drive that you may not develop later in life. And I did. And George looked up and he said, I want you to read for the part of the DJ in a cruising movie I'm doing. And I said, why would I want to do that? I already am a DJ. And Fred Roos, who was sitting behind me, I heard him go, oh, Jesus. George didn't bat an eyelash. He said, all right, read for the part of the teacher. Give him the teacher script. I went in the next room, came out and read it and got the part. So I would have been in fine shape had I read for the DJ part. And of course, he found Wolfman. And one of the greatest real-life performances I've ever seen in my life was Wolfman in that movie. Hey, somebody come down here and eat the popsicles. Do you remember it? I mean, he played like two characters. He played Wolfman on the air, and then he played a guy who was just playing Wolfman's tape. So that when Kurt went to talk to him, he said, no, I'm not Wolfman. And but that's what Wolfman had going for him. He had that mythological sort of standing. So anyway, that's how I met George. And I can send you a picture. I just did a Comic-Con, and I got a new picture made up.
Yeah, send
that
it.
That kind of explains the genesis of how those post voices got on the film. We go to George's house. There's four or five of us, voice actors and actors from San Francisco. The other guys were all a good bit older, and they've all passed away. But I mentioned their names in the picture. And and so we went over to George's house. I'd been there before. I'd been in his screening room to see movies that I had little parts in. So I knew the screening room. And we sat on these big floppy ottomans and laughed and talked. And George came in and said, okay, I need you guys to start reading. And he handed out scripts randomly. And then he would collect them and shuffle them and hand them out again. That's literally what happened. And we said, hey, George, before we get started, because that's a little George. That's Georgie. That cute kid from the neighborhood that makes those funny movies. Actually, all he had made was THX, but yeah, that was it.
Was he trying to get you guys to just to see who can come up with what on the spot? Is there a competition vibe going?
They were written lines. As it turned out, the movie was in deep into production, and they were dropping voices on the helmets.
Nice.
You know?
Huh.
Mm. So I just made that up. I like the sound of it. Dropping voices on the moment. there was a guy, and his name is Anthony Forrest, who has emerged in Comic-Con suddenly. He's from England, and he claims to be the sand trooper who said, these aren't the droids we're looking for. So I wrote him. I wrote him a nice note, and I said, you know, you are, in fact, that guy, but it's my voice. And any voice print machine could prove it, and I know it's me, and I know the other voices were from that same session. And I've not heard back from him, but I guess there's two of us out there representing that character, because it turned out to be, you know, an infamous line. Certainly affected my life. But in any event, when I went to see the movie, that was in 75. When I went to see the movie in 77, by then I'd moved to L.A. I was with a friend, a general manager of K-West Radio, and he had a contest. Join us at the Westwood Village Theater, and the first 100 people get to see a new science fiction movie. Pretty much all there was to it. So I went with him and sat in the middle. We had our seats assigned. And this damn thing hits the screen and almost blows us out of the seats. It's still stunning. I almost don't care to watch Star Wars movies on a TV. I don't have the 60, 80-inch screen or whatever the hell.
Right.
But I want to see that in a movie theater. Anyway, I was in a movie theater, and we're just all agape and agog, and what the hell is this? And we're looking around, and people are laughing and pointing, and it was very exciting.
Yeah.
And then the scene at Mos Eisley came up, and they had a guard there at the cantina, and that scene came up. And first of all, I adored and still do Alec Guinness. I could tell you most of the films he made back when he was making them for the studios in England. Our Man in Havana, which is still a great film to watch by Graham Greene. Anyway, there's an aged Alec Guinness, and I hear me freaking responding to him.
That's awesome.
Pardon me, I almost wet myself. I said to the guy next to me, Pondy, like, that's me. Anyway, go ahead.
He's like, yeah, okay.
Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, if I just delivered a sandwich to the set of Star Wars, I'd be bragging for years. When I go to your website, you talk about, listen, I was in it, but it was a short involvement in it. But I got to ask you about the story where you came up with the phrase Wookiee. How did that occur?
Well, it sounds like I came up with it as if I was offering it in response to something. Not at all the case. During those days, 71, I think I finally got out in 72, I was in the reserves. So one weekend a month, you had to go to a reserve meeting and, you know, basically screw off and sign out and come home. But we had to wear the uniforms. We wore fatigues.
Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. It was a joke, and I feel some guilt about it. Now that I'm an old guy, I run into a lot of other old guys, and a lot of them were in NOM, and I talked to them about it. And they said, you know, to a man, that they probably would have done that had they had the option. But in any event, it was a very serious time. But I was in the reserves, and I had this session on a Saturday. So me and my best friend jumped into our minivan and sped down to Mission Street to the studio, Coast Recorders. I come running in. And I still have my uniform on. I've got the long hair. I stuffed it up into my hat. And George looks at me, and he looks at Bill, my friend, and he says, what's up? Where were you? I said, I'm sorry I'm late. I'm in the military, as you can see, trying to play for his patriotic sympathies. And he just stared at me, and I said, well, this is my friend, Bill Wookiee. And I just... And then I said something apparently about running over Wookiee. I don't recall that, but then about 10-15 years later, I was surprised and gratified to see in Rolling Stone that George said, Oh, yeah, the Wookiee. I had this actor named Terry McGovern, and he said he ran over his pet Wookiee. I don't know. I don't know what I said, but it's been a source of first annoyance, and then amusement, and now pride to the Wookiee family. At first, they were... The kids got teased at school and all that, but they handled it well, and they like the affiliation now. So that's it. He just has one of those, very sticky substance on his brain. He remembers things. They stick to him like flypapers.
No, Terry, let me ask you something. So, like, being coming up through radio and obviously going through voice acting and going through, you know, being part of these huge films and going to cartoons and a million different things. What do you think about today's media? Like, we're able to talk to you through this little show that we've created out of the basement of our show, and every person who has something to talk about can get up on the computer and be able to broadcast to, you know, anybody who really wants to listen to it and get it. What do you think about, you know, you've seen the evolution of all this. What do you think about the state of radio, if you will, or podcasting now? And do you think it's a good thing, or do you think there's like a art that is being lost through it?
Oh, radio killed the art long before podcasts came along. Radio ate itself. There was that shift in the 80s, thanks to the Fat Man, who started getting on the air and hating people. Limbaugh, you know. And he revolutionized everything, and his numbers were astronomical. Mm-hmm. And the guys that run radio station are nothing if not businessmen. They want
exactly numbers.
Good numbers. And they want to charge the maximum dollar for the time. It's capitalism, and it works well. But it chews up a lot of things in the process. I saw radio go from being personality influenced while playing music or doing interviews, while not doing anything specifically political. I mean, I remember as a kid growing up, there were two clubs in Pittsburgh where I live that you could drink after hours because we had blue laws. And one was the Republican Club and one was the Democratic Club. Mm. And the only affiliation you had was, if you were thirsty, which one was closer? I mean, it wasn't it had nothing to do with politics.
Right.
We did. You give a shit. My grandfather was a big Republican politician back in the 30s, and he did some significant things. He developed the two county parks in Pittsburgh that are quite beautiful. And but he was an old style Republican. There's nothing of that left in the Republican Party. And there's, I think, precious little of what the old Democratic Party was.
Yep.
Left in the Democratic Party of today. So things change, and so did broadcasting. And people say to me, why don't you go back on the radio? I said, do you have a station in mind? Because my skill set would attract, I still think it would attract.
Mm-hmm. But, 100%.
But it's not the kind of thing you can convince people of. How do you go in and say, listen, I can bring all that stuff back that I did on the radio. But when I was on the radio, I was in my 30s. Talking to an audience in its 30s, you know,
yes,
10 years either side, maybe 5 years either side. And I'm not that guy anymore. Although I think I have relevancy. I have two boys in their 30s. I'm well aware of their lives and what they're dealing with. But it would be a very, very tough sell. And first of all, it would have to be a station that decided, we need a new platform. Let's go back to the old days of personality radio. Then I try to be first in line for that, but I don't see it. I don't see that anywhere except on podcasts. Mm. And then podcasts really prohibit what I did too,
right?
Because I can't play music without paying a fortune, or unless I want to fly under the radar,
right?
And then the point of that, if you want to be successful, you know, gee, I hope nobody listens to this. I would want people to listen to it. And it's very hard to get
Yeah, see, I'm torn because I listen to, you know, I'm a you know, we obviously
you're not lip torn, are you?
No, I wish. No, I
don't have that craggy voice.
Obviously, we do the podcast every week, and we've had some mass, you know, really good success with it. And I'm a consumer of podcasts. Like I probably listen to 6 to 7, like, regularly every week. And it's just, to me, it took what radio did wrong, and people are able to get rid of that. And you really get to know, you know, the guys you're listening to, the host you're listening to, and it becomes this almost connection. And there's no time restraints and anything like that. So I think, like, the different kind of content you can get now, you can almost find anything that gauges your interest and really find it and dial it in. And I really enjoy that part of podcasting. It, you know, it kind of cuts out all these middlemen that have their hands all over your content. So,
well, you know, I always defend those middlemen because I have a lot of really good ones. And we're talking about time salesmen.
Right.
The guys who went out and literally sold you. Here we have a young man from Pittsburgh who has all his original teeth, his hair hasn't fallen out yet, and they would go out and sell us, and that's how we, you know, that was the bacon. That was
right.
Those were the guys that literally produced the bacon. So, but it wasn't so much, and that was the problem. You didn't continue to deal with the local guys. Because something was invented called marketing, and marketing was various companies that told radio stations, big radio stations, how to do it. If you do it this way, and when I came back to radio in 1988 at K101, I knew there was something wrong when I noticed there were no turntables. Nothing actually for me, no buttons for me to push. I love pushing the buttons and stuff. And I had an engineer who played everything on CART, and it was a playlist. At K-San, which was my big changeover in 74, I went to this FM underground station, we called them. And this was the granddaddy of them, KSAN in San Francisco. And I'll be damned, man, you went into that studio and there was a box of red dots. That meant there were 20 or 30 LPs in a box, like a piece of furniture. And you were suggested strongly that you play two or three of those an hour. Then there was a library beyond that in the studio that contained sort of the hits of the station, but not hits, not single hits, but album hits, which would later become MOR, I guess, or AOR. Yeah, AOR. And then beyond that, there was a bigger library, you know, the studio where you could go way back. You could get the original Country Joe album or original thing. So you had to work. There's no playlist. You had to actually put the show together, and it became a reflection of who you were, what your sense of the segue was, you know, blending one song into another, and then coming on and talking to people. And I was considered a good morning man because I was insane. I wasn't nasty. That Howard hadn't come along yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the zoo, it's all pre-zoo. So it's just me and whoever might happen to wander in. Lots of times I would go out on the street and do the show. It was absolutely freewheeling. And it lasted for the whole time I was there. And then a year after I left, and this is not mutually inclusive, the station went country, which was, it was mourned like Evita in Argentina when K-San disappeared. People have never been the same. They still remember, and I'm talking about older people, people 50 plus, who remember those days and bemoan them. So how do you do it in a podcast? Because podcasts are very niche oriented.
Right.
I mean, they, and that's understandable. So how do you do a sort of a broad-based appeal, talk about things, play some music, do a sketch? You know what I mean? Those
yeah.
kinds of things.
Where
you're basically saying, you just listen to me, and I'll keep it coming, and you'll love it.
In a way, yes, obviously, there is that. Like, you kind of create your content and what you're... You know what you're comfortable with, but in a way that is the conundrum. How do you step out to reach a more not global, but a larger,
robust
audience? How do you hit many markets? And I don't know. I guess it's kind of this evolving thing that we are still trying to figure out. Social media wise really helps, you know, getting things out there. It helps with Instagram and Twitter and all that. So it's like the work is done obviously on the show, but then that's only the beginning. It's the week of promotion that we do. So, and you know, we find like we are a guest centric show and it's just me and Mike. There's no one else helping us. So we try to schedule guests, you know, weeks and weeks ahead of time, because by the time I edit the podcast and we email it and put up little graphics and tweet it and do all that, it's like the next week, okay, we got to reset and get the next one out. So, but it is a labor of love, and over the years we've had some sponsors and things have come, but and the numbers, you know, the numbers gradually do go up, which is cool, but it is kind of like, it's such a new medium. Now it's not that like, you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the next platform that's going to carry podcasts, or what can get this to a bigger audience? But it is cool to see your demographics. You see listens in California, and you see listens in Washington, and New York, and New Jersey, and Florida, and other countries. So it is pretty cool that people, you know, you can send your friend a link in a text message and be like, hey, check this out, and he can listen to it while he's working out or on his car ride. So I don't know. The benefits are really cool, but I think it's kind of that question can't be completely answered yet. At least by the small guy like us. Like if you're a celebrity, yeah, boom, automatically you got 50,000 people following you in 2 seconds. But when you're the small guy, how do you make it bigger and bigger and bigger? We're trying to figure that out.
Well, it's quite a problem. You were talking about, getting, doing marketing, essentially. You know, marketing doesn't have to be a bad thing. If you're doing marketing, if you're the guy doing the marketing, I think you have a shot. And hooray for you guys. Now, so let's say, you know, they use this line, the elevator pitch. You've heard that? The elevator pitch is, you're a writer in Hollywood, and you wait in the lobby of creative artists, right. and one of the big agents come in, and you jump on the elevator with him. And you have maybe two or three floors to say, I have an idea for a movie. It is this. And it can't really be longer than two sentences. How do you describe what you do, your labor of love, which it should be?
I would say what we do in a quick sentence is every week we try to interview someone who is very passionate about their craft, whether it's like someone like you who has worlds of experience, or like 1 week we've had a hippo attack survivor on, and it's just as interesting. So we just try to find very interesting people every week.
Okay. And you talk about, so it's pretty broad-based because you're talking about whatever it is. You don't limit yourself to entertainment or radio or...
we don't.
Well, that's good for you.
We kind of made that decision, not really consciously, but I guess more like just collectively, a couple years ago. Like, this is episode 250, so we've been around, you know, doing about 5 years. I don't think I can do just athletes.
Podcast.
You've done 500 shows?
250 shows.
Halfway there.
250 shows.
Yes.
Yep.
My God.
Every week.
I think you're doing your 10,000 hours. That's for sure.
It's funny you said that. When you said that, I said, I put it into my my phone and calculated. We're about 400 hours of content, but that doesn't, you know, that's not the editing and thing. We're getting close to 10,000, I think.
Oh, no. Don't shortchange yourself. You don't count the finished hours.
Of course.
You count all the hours
that
went into it.
So I could never do, like, I'm a craft beer podcast. I love craft beer, but I could never talk to, like, so the thing that keeps us coming here every Monday night, every Wednesday night is talking to someone different or is talking
it's
to
the someone. Potpourri of it, podcasts.
It really is. So, I mean,
why can't you talk about craft beer if it's something that you really love?
No, I'm saying I couldn't do it every single week.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Those nichified things that, and they usually get some advertising dollars when they, you know, from the beer industry or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we could like dial it in and do one thing. I just think about 15 weeks in a row, we would be, we don't want to, like, we have talked to so many amazing people through this little thing and been able to kind of get stuff out there and kind of build a resume that, like, we just kind of keep wanting to seeing where it can go. And that's been the fun part of it, honestly.
Do you get political at all?
Not really.
I mean, we've Good. Had politicians on with some minor ones, but not like a full on, all right, this is what's wrong with this group and this is what's wrong with that group kind of things. Yeah. We don't do.
Good for you. Stay away from that shit. I mean, you don't need that. You know, really, you don't, because it's being done. Oh, my God.
It's the worst.
It's way overdone.
Listen.
So good for you. I have another question for you.
All right.
What, and I want to tell you thank you for being on my show today.
No problem.
So I want to ask you, each of you, what is your favorite podcast?
Okay.
And I'm going to jot this down.
All right. I guess I will take that first. I'm a pretty big podcast. Like I said, I'm a pretty big podcast consumer. So, I mean, like, there is the big ones. I think Joe Rogan Experience puts out a ridiculous amount of content, 3-hour interviews with people, and really dives into character. And I think he's kind of paved the way for podcasts.
Joe Rogan.
Yes.
What about Mark Maron? Is he still
fantastic
out shows?
Still cranking out fantastic content. But I also like, I want to say, other than just, like, I listen to a couple comedians podcasts, and I like that, but I also love, there's two podcasts I love that would be kind of outside of the interview format or outside of the conversation. One is Radiolab. By WNYC. It is a kind of bringing, like, modern science topics and discussing them and just these amazing, almost journalistic investigations of these stories in the
kind
way
of
they
an,
do.
Kind of an NPR, right?
Exactly.
Kind of an NPR.
Exactly.
It's very professional.
It's professional, okay. And the production is ridiculous. And the other one, I just finished today, and I was actually going to talk about it after we got off. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History is one of the most amazing podcasts I've ever heard. He'll release, like, two a year, but they are, like, 4.5 hours long of just – it is, like, a history story that he has researched so much and done, and the production value makes what we do seem like, wow, you know, like, this guy's done research and all the stuff that people don't do anymore. You know, they just read something online and they think it's true. He cites everything and does quotes, and he does it just really amazing content. That would be the other one I would recommend. So I would go Rogan, Radiolab, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, and then I could recommend a whole bunch more to you. But those would be the three that really diverse content among those three.
Now, who is that, Mike?
That was Scott.
Okay, Mike, what's your list?
I mean, Scott hit most of the major ones. I mean, I tend to go for, like, smaller ones and some of our friends and all. It's not to promote a friend, but I really love his podcast. Our buddy KP Burke, who does the American Loser podcast, he does it with his father.
I'm sorry, you broke up the American what?
Loser podcast. And
American Loser.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an in-depth history
about people who came basically in second place in the United States, but it's like a, it's not, it's a comedy that he has his father and some guests on, but it's a true in-depth look at some different people and just like decipher everything that's going on and just have, you know, funny takes on it in between. And all he does it weekly, does a great job with it, and we promote it on the podcast a lot, and it's one of my favorite ones there.
Good. Okay, well, you gave me a good list. Now, you guys listen to these podcasts on your handheld devices.
Mostly, yes.
Reusing old... Yeah. Well, what's going to happen that I think... You talked about the next step. Certainly for podcasts, the thing that's going to make a huge amount of difference is the internet radio installed in cars.
Right. Yep. It's basically already there. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because I have a 10-year-old car, I can't, I don't know much about it, but I'm anxious to do that. I have SiriusXM, and I love it. I really love that channel because I'm basically a rock and roll guy, and I've got deep tracks and classic vinyl and the Tom Petty station and so on and so forth. But even at that, you start to run out, and they have hundreds of other things, none of which I'm very interested in. I am an MSNBC-er, I should warn you. So I have that on there, and CNN sometimes. But once you can do that in a place where I believe there are more ears than anywhere is in the car. Do you agree?
No.
The car is the best. By far the best listening environment.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law loves podcasts, and she has a long commute. She's all the way from Napa to Petaluma, for anybody who knows Northern California, which is about 40 miles, 35 miles in traffic every day. And that's how she passes her time. She listens to podcasts car. I said, "Do you listen when you get home?" She said, "No, I'm busy. I got to get things going and got to get the kids and so on and so forth."
Yeah, I'm all in. I'm in the car, at the gym I'm in, and walking the dog I'm in, and even like cooking, I'll put that on like over music many times. It's I don't know. I guess I consume a lot of content at this point, but I really do love the medium.
Well, I am looking forward to my next purchase, which is going to be the newest iPhone I can get my hands on. I have an iPhone that was made in 1947.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know how they did that, but it's just totally antiquated. And my kids, will call me and they can't get through. And they go, what happened? Is it that stupid phone of yours? Well, yes, it was. And so I look forward to that. And as my daughter-in-law, before mentioned, says, "Terry, you're not going to believe it. You know, what happens when you make that kind of a leap in this age?"
I will email you like a list of top 10 podcasts that I think you might enjoy when you do get that. And I hope your phone case does have like a Launchpad McQuack like symbol on the back.
Listen, before we basically stop talking about podcasts, if we are, I did have an internet radio experience that was quite enjoyable. A guy down in Santa Barbara, a radio guy, came up with Boss Radio. And for a number of years, I think 3 years, I did the weekend mornings. I did one show and it was repeated Saturday and Sunday. And it was great fun. But I got really tired of getting excited about Jackie Wilson and, the oldies and the Archies and that crap. So I just said, I don't want to do this. And I haven't really replaced it with anything else except an ongoing project. And I'd like feedback from you guys. My brother Tim and I have done all but about 5 episodes of a baby boomer show. And we called it Timboland, Timboland, Timboland.net, which was unfortunate. And I told them all the way along, we got to call it a Boomerland or something, that he liked it. It had his name in it. It was sort of his point of view, things he remembered. And what it became was an almanac of each year from 1946 through 1964. And we're not quite finished, but we're published and we're on the air. And listen to 62. That's a particularly good show.
All right.
Or listen to whatever you want. Timboland, T-I-M-B-O-L-A-N-D, Timboland.net.
Timboland.
Definitely check it out. Terry, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know we're a little past our time, but I got to quickly ask you about the getting on DuckTales with Launchpad and the Quack. Did you have that voice in hand, or did you come up with it? And have you seen the new series yet, and what do you think about that? Yeah.
Okay, to answer your first question, I was a great fan of a comedy team called, what's it called? Burns and Schreiber.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And if you look them up, Schreiber had a big walrus mustache and was very deadpan. And the other guy was a manic depressive named Jack Burns. And I loved the gimmick thing he did. They did it in a bit called the taxi cab, and Burns gets in the back. Pardon me, Burns gets in the back seat, and Schreiber's the driver. So it's a great shot. You see the two of them, and one's in the back seat, one's in the front seat. And Burns, and he was really irritating. He later got on the Mayberry Show with Andy Griffith, and Andy couldn't stand him because his thing was. Yeah, I was back there at that place where you picked me up, where you got in, Schreiber says. Yep, yep, oh, yep, yep, yep. Huh, huh, yeah. And that was a voice that I used to like to imitate. So when I got to the audition, which I was not invited to at VoiceCaster, you'll I guess, be able to note that there's a certain kind of aggressiveness in me, which did me well sometimes. And kicked me in the ass other times. But it was one of those things where I went to an audition in Burbank. I lived in West LA. It was a 40-minute drive, and it was one line for some obscure beer company. And I'm looking at the other pile of scripts, and it says A-list only or something like that. And I'm when you're an actor, commercial actor especially, and you go into these casting sessions, it's always good to develop a skill of being able to read upside down. So you can sort of crane your neck over. And I said, I can do this. I want to do this. So I called my agent and I begged him. I said, please get me, tell this guy I want to read for this. And after much, the guy didn't want to. He ran the place. And he said, oh, this is the list. This is the list Disney wants. And I think what my agent Bob said to him was, look, this actor is an enormous pain in the ass. If you would do this for me, I'll owe you one. So I went in and did it. And what is that on your end or mine? That, did you hear the ding?
No, hello? I did not hear.
No, I didn't hear a ding.
No ding here.
That must be from my boxing days. So I auditioned for it, and what it said in the, there was a picture, you know, a little line drawing of the character, Launchpad, and a description of him being kind of a doofus, and he was always crashing his plane, which appealed to me in a very dark way. And then the only, I mean, not the only, but the real important thing is voice matches or voice references. And I tell people who get into this business of doing voices, and I teach commercial voice and animated voice. If I don't care how old you are, but if you're young and you don't know who they're referring to when they say Mel Blanc, or for that matter Jack Burns or whoever. Now, of course, now you can just Google that stuff, but it's really important to have a sense of who the references are. And I did, and they wanted a guy who was a cross between Jack Burns and John Ratzenberger. Clifford from Cheers.
Yeah,
right.
And, I put that in my computer, in my head, and I that's what I came up with. And I got the part. So But I do want to mention that I think you brought it up. The DuckTales show was one of the great experiences in my life and a very profitable experience because, as you know, my character spun off into another series.
I was just going to say that. Very rarely in a cartoon do you get a crossover. Never mind, you know, we see like a...
Very rarely in a live acting.
That's what I was going to say. Live acting, we see it, but a cartoon, rarely are you going to... They're like, wow, we need more Launchpad. I mean, you made it into two series.
Yeah, well, Tad Stone, who is the creator, explained that Darkwing really needed a foil because he was so, you know, he was so nuts and eager to do good. So he needed a foil, and Tad Stone said, well, everybody loves Launchpad. Let's bring him over. So
I love it.
And I just did my second Comic-Con. It was in Sacramento, which is in my backyard. That was nice. And I finally got to spend time with Jim Cummings, because back when I was doing DuckTales, except for the first couple of shows, I had moved to San Francisco to a radio up there, and I would go to a studio and do a phone patch. So I wasn't in the room with everybody else, which was disappointing. Because animation is great. You all sit in one room. If you're doing a video game, you're one character doing one script in the studio by yourself.
Right.
So that worked out great, and I got to spend time with Jim, who's probably the hottest guy in voices now. He, the Lion King, he does both Tigger and Pooh. The guy's a genius. And we went out and had a few beers, and then he became a drunken genius, which was even more charming.
I would love to get hammered with a bunch of voice actors, because you could be with like three people, but the day after, like, you're like, there was like 30 people there, you know, they were all talking.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, and I'm available, okay, if I'm one of those guys.
All right, you're in. You're in. Okay. Come to New Jersey, and we're doing it.
All right, babies. I am very happy for you. Why don't you email me your mailing address?
I will.
And I'll send you two pictures from the con, okay?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Terrence, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You have worlds of experience. I'd love to have you on again in the future. And it's just cool to hear all the different things you do and have done. So I want to thank you for coming on. And really good.
I'm happy to come back next time. Of course, you pay.
Well, yeah, sure. So it was nice having you on the one time, Terry.
Touche. No, guys, I'm here for you. I'm going to go and listen to these podcasts and maybe get inspired to start doing one on my own.
I think you absolutely should.
All right.
I think
I'll call you.
You just talking to different voice actors alone for an hour would be a great podcast. Just talking about voice acting alone. Right there is just a really neat podcast.
Yeah, it would, I think. I agree with you. Well, I'm very blessed. I have a good life, and I have a new life thanks to the Comic-Cons.
Yes.
And new friends like you, so I'm doing okay.
Hello.
I'm here.
Oh, I just found the feature that I could end the call with one caller and not you.
Oh.
Just found
that. I'm surprised you didn't hit the other button then. I just did the Scott and Terrence hour.
Launchpad and Scott. Are you welcome to the Launchpad McHacks podcast.
Scott, I was talking to myself in the mirror for an hour. Can I come back on the podcast?
No. But yeah, man, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to have two like kind of world-renowned voice actors on the show. And I think Mike, I was listening to this interview. I think that checks off a box from our original checklist of people we would interview. Someone from Star Wars.
That's true. That's true.
One.
We got that there.
Another one in the book.
Bites of dust. Yeah.
But really cool interview. I like when guests switch it on us and we have to actually answer questions And then it's like, oh, you almost scramble for a moment in your mind. Like, I forget how to, like, talk. Even though we do this every week, you're like, oh, wow, I'm being asked a question. Yeah. I'm being asked a question.
I had to think about what I do? Wait a minute.
You want to know about me?
Yeah.
Our whole podcast is about you.
I think it was Terrence and Matt Pinfield that turned it on us. Those are the two that come to mind.
Matt Pinfield.
You can think of others.
Matt Pinfield was great.
Yeah.
So was Terrence. Definitely. So was Terrence. But
oh, absolutely.
Mr. Launchpad McQuack himself, Terrence McGivern.
Yeah, man. I mean, we didn't even go through half the stuff that was on his IMDb. My favorite one I saw on there, apparently in one show, he was a cheese demonstrator. And I really wanted to ask him how he got into that role, but
we'll have to.
Yeah, we ran out of time, and we'll have to get him back on the show.
We'll have to email him. Questions we didn't get to ask you. Tell us about the cheese demonstrator.
Ah, yes.
I was a young thespian.
Night one night Emmy.
I was a young thespian. But
I thought of Othello when I played it.
But that interview went long. We're backed up against time here. So, Perlo, we're just going to get on out of here, I think. Good episode tonight. Anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, I'm going to promote again a new podcast called Dear Pod. That's Dear Pod with a comma. It's hosted by Aaron McGuire and Patrick O'Brien, where they do weekly conversations about old Dear Abby and all those advice columns, going over some of the advice I was giving. The 9 episodes in, absolutely hilarious. So much energy. They're really good people. Check them out. It's called Dear Pod.
All right. And before we go, I'm just going to promote the network we belong to, which is called the BS Podcast Network. Not only can you listen to us on there, but there's a lot of other podcasts. They do a great job at promoting our stuff on Twitter. So you can go check them out. BS Podcast. Nice guys over there. They support a lot of good content. And if you have a podcast, reach out to them. Maybe you can get on the network. So it's pretty cool. So that is the BS Podcast Network. I guess that's it. It's time for us to go. It's time for us to say goodbye.
Time for me to train for Cher and Goldie Hawn and Dolly Parton.
I expect a training video of like their faces on dummies and you.
Pointing hard now.
But
Scott of Russia in the log cabin. I'm lifting up haystacks. I'm getting prepared. Running up a mountain.
That's it. But guys, that's it, man. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Later. Yeah.